What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley. We're spent over on the board. S&P futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 144. Dow futures up 218 as we flipped around at a plus side here pretty heavily in the middle of the day yesterday. Buy the dip, I guess. Eddie, did you buy the dip? Did Lou buy the dip?
I did not.
See, I would have thought.
Nor did I.
See, I would have thought that Lou would be all over this because it kind of.
No, I try to avoid dipping. Sounds too much like snuff.
Yeah, but I think two of your best buddies were the guys who, I think, front ran and really did the whole thing here. First thing that happened was the European markets way down. Your buddy Putin came out and said he was going to help Europe by somehow giving them more gas or something like that. Now, was there any chance that Putin and his array of criminals around him didn't front run that of the natural gas? All of a sudden, natural gas is down like 20 bucks, not 20 bucks, but like 40 cents or something, which is a huge move under $6. I'm like, hey, what happened to natural gas? And all of a sudden, Putin's going to help Europe. Then the market came back, tried to rally, then went flying back down again. And all of a sudden, the rumor was that Mitch McConnell was going to come up with a compromise to keep the government going for a week or two after Janet Yellen was on there talking about how Janet Yellen, of the $7 million girl who got all the money from the people she was supposed to regulate, then got the same job back again, which is so unconscionable to me, I can't even go there.
Janet Yellen, who is defending the IRS procedural change that will allow them to track any transaction coming in and out of a bank for a personal checking account over $600.
I don't understand, although... What makes you think they? Why don't? Everybody tells me they can do it anyway. They can do it now.
I'm sure. Oh no, I'm sure they can do it. But the point is that they are going to dump that data now into the IRS. They're not doing it. That's a search under the Fourth Amendment, and they are not allowed to do it without a warrant. What's the basis for that? For tracking, for intruding into your individual bank transaction, to the extent that data is now siphoned up and sent to a central repository at the Internal Revenue Service. You don't get to do that just randomly.
While
I've raised that point, I'll raise another one that I'd like to talk about, which is that Google, apparently, since 2019, has been responding to so-called keyword warrants, where the feds are allowed to come in and just sweep up all communications that Google has from searches using specific keywords. Now, if that's being done in response to a warrant that is, you know, tailored to a crime or a particular individual, I guess I'm okay with that. But this, I think, is an actual, just sort of a random sweep looking for particular words being uttered on Google or in Google searches. And then they vacuum up that information and then start looking at the people who are doing it without any, you know, warrant or probable cause that these particular individuals are involved in some nefarious activity. That's a problem.
Two questions. Did you ever read the book? I think it was a long time ago. Did you ever read the book?
No, I didn't read a book called A Long Time Ago.
maybe you did. You still remember because it was a long time ago. Wah, wah.
Surely you just. No,
surely.
Stop calling me Shirley.
Yeah, stop calling me Shirley. A book called The Negotiator?
No, I don't recall that one.
It was a while ago. It was one of the, I don't know what you want to call him, kind of a born identity kind of thing. But this guy was a negotiator, and he was, they asked him to come out of retirement and do a job, but then typical of the government, they really didn't want him to do the job. because they didn't want the person out, even though they wanted to make it seem like they did want the person out, some one of those kind of deals. So the guy keeps going on his own, and he ends up getting the person freed, who was, you know, who was kidnapped by another government or whatever. So finally, he wanted to essentially come in from the cold, and all he did was pick up his cell phone and say something like, president's name, assassination, or something all in the same, and because he knew they would find him instantly, and they did, when he wanted to come in. And because they're constantly trolling the cell phones for stuff like that. I mean, according to this book, anyway. But I'd love
to believe we were that effective, but you know, we couldn't. We even when we knew, for example, that there was an element in the January 6th demonstration that was going to try to get inside the Capitol, even when a relatively small number of people, but nevertheless, we knew they were there. Our intelligence people knew they were there. We don't take the steps to stop it. Even when we know, for example, that certain events are about to occur, or we've got certain criminal activity about to occur, we don't take the steps to stop it. The most frightening thing that I've read, in addition to this Google sweep, but this is even more frightening, is the FBI's letter that they feel it's within their charter to investigate so-called activism against school boards. The letter published by Garland was designed to stifle dissent, and the idea that the FBI comes out and says, you know, people are yelling at school boards, and school boards feel threatened, and so the FBI is going to come in. My immediate reaction was, where is your jurisdiction on this? These are local crimes. Where is the federal interest on this? And it really, I mean, the letter was issued specifically with the purpose to chill people's involvement in First Amendment activities in front of school boards, and I was horrified at it.
Well, two things. One is I want to back you up before we get too far down the road here, and the first thing you mentioned, but I was played golf with a guy who was a priest, a teaching priest over in Korea, and he said when he was teaching one of your favorite things was economics and kind of labor law, and he got the stuff where he was teaching about unions and how they were a good thing, and the CIA showed up and says, we don't want anybody teaching about unions over here. So the stuff that we see here, it's not like people haven't thought it up. They don't.
When was this?
15 years ago, 20 years ago. He'd long since been a teacher over there, so it was a while ago.
I mean, it's not like the Koreans don't have labor unions.
No.
They do.
Actually, it might not have been in Korea. Where the hell was he? He taught in a bunch of different places, and this was after golf, so I don't remember the entire conversation, but he basically said his theme was, and if I remember the name, you'd know it, because he was the brother of a real big shot here in Chicago that ran like a whole judicial wing or something. And he basically said that the U.S. is the greatest country in the world if you're living here, but overseas, all we are is a front force for the big corporations. Was his theme anyway. But I want to back you up a little bit on the IRS thing about the state or the bank accounts. A lady in my hood, who I got friendly with.
First of all, let me just say also, I can't imagine a senior U.S. government official defending something like that as if it was a good idea without the absolutely, and acting so clueless that she thinks that this is an appropriate thing for her to say. That's incredible to me.
Lou, the lady should resign tomorrow on 15 different reasons, in my opinion. But my question to you is, and this is more of a procedural bureaucratic question, not that you're a bureaucrat, is this lady that I used to, well, I'd walk Scruff, she'd walk Puck, was the name of their guy. Scruff and Puck got along, we'd BS in front and down the block like everybody else in our neighborhood does when they walk their dogs. Well, turns out she ends up being a lady who does a lot of software stuff for banks. She had just been working at the bank that I used to bank at, BMO Harris, and I said something about, and she was talking about they do all the reporting requirements. I said, so you're one of those that if somebody takes out over 10 grand, You got to report it. She goes, don't think for a second everybody doesn't know everything you do. That if it's 500 hours, they know about it. So my question, Lou, is if it's all accessible by, quote, government, and at some level it's all reported to, quote, government, the anti-money laundering people, whoever the hell they are, what makes you think that once it enters the bowels of Washington that everybody doesn't have access to it? I mean, why would the IRS be separate? I would never even think they would be separate.
Well, okay, so here's IRS records, tax records, are actually supposed to be inviolate. You are not, the game we all play is that information that you send into the IRS stays within the IRS and doesn't go anywhere and can't be extracted except by a legal process, either a search warrant or something akin to it that allows somebody else outside the IRS to reach in there and grab that. That's the theory we operate on. And for the most part, for the average citizen, it works. One of the most disturbing things that I saw coming out last year was the release of private tax data on Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook and Bill Gates and a bunch of other wealthy Americans who had filed tax returns. And their returns were released without their consent, without their knowledge, to some activist journalist group who published the earth-shaking news that really rich people have ways of avoiding paying taxes on every single penny that they make. Duh.
Yeah.
But the you know, this all came out with really no huge outrage from, you know, the press. I mean, I think somebody talked about it, or a couple of people talked about the fact that, wait a minute, we got a rogue IRS employee that's turning this information out. What? How on earth is this? I don't know. Somebody needs to be, you know, strung up for this, because this undermines the social contract that we all have with our government that says we will turn in, you know, some of the most sensitive information that we have, what we make and how we spend it, in exchange for the understanding, you know, so the government can collect taxes, and the understanding that this isn't going to go anywhere. And to break that down creates in my mind a real problem in terms of people's willingness to file taxes, their willingness to share information with the government that I think the government has a legitimate basis for, based on our legal structure. I agree. I understand that the government has the ability, or the banks have the ability, to do that kind of surveillance and reach down into your accounts for that information. But that doesn't mean that it should be just handed over willy-nilly to the feds or anybody else without your consent or without probable cause that a crime has been committed. That's a police state. And I realize we're headed in that, we're getting pushed in that direction, especially by the people who seem to be in power right now. We don't seem to have trouble with this, but that's a real problem. It's appalling to me that somebody like Janet Yellen would say, I don't see a problem with us getting information on your bank account down to a $600 level transaction.
See, I think they already have it, Lou. I don't. The idea that if somebody really wanted that in government, that they won't be able to find it from you. They may
be able to get it by some kind of means, but you know, to act on it is another matter, because a court would say, what are you doing with this information and why did you have it? I mean, I'm involved in a case right now where we're litigating a warrant that was issued based on information that came from a source that the federal government doesn't want to identify. And that's not legal. And it's going to get forced out by a court. They're going to pull these people in and say, okay, here's your choice. You can either enforce the law and tell us where you got that information for the search warrant, or you lose the search warrant. The warrant's invalid. And the evidence that you've got that shows a crime has been committed goes away, and you'll never get the conviction that you want.
Well, I flip back and forth like a fish not like the clam of yesterday, on this whistleblower
that was,
stuff.
That was one of the most, let me just say, that was one of the most fascinating discussions I've had the pleasure of listening to on Stocks and Jocks.
The clam?
Happy's a clam and where that came from?
Yeah, well,
I had no idea.
High tide?
I didn't know, I forgot all about the high tide part. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I had not either. I assumed that people said happy as a clam because clams, you know, just sort of sit there and observe the world and absorb whatever, and you know, don't have a care in the world if you're a clam. You're also pretty dumb, but that's
but you don't know you're dumb.
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. By the way, just to run off of a rabbit hole, the Russians, when Jen Psaki was working for the it was a State Department under Obama as their spokesman. The Russians figured out what was what and began identifying or calling her, referring to her as a measure of intelligence. And they said, you know, the example that was published in the Russian press was a clam has got it like a two Psaki level of intelligence.
God.
I remember reading that and translating it and going, whoa.
Well, no, this is everything you see, everything you do right now. I mean, the idea that now that you're not going to take cash at ballparks and you're not going to take cash on the toll road anymore. This is a 25-year... I recognize this for only one reason.
Wait a minute. How are they not taking cash on a toll road?
They don't.
What happens...
You got to have an easy pass, or you have to go online and with your license plate before they send you a ticket and pay through your credit card or something.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So it's like the toll roads out here in Denver. They finally got smart about that. It charges your license plate, or it sends you a bill for the toll if you're not on the system, registered on the system.
But I mean, the idea of somebody coming from North Dakota can't pay cash is insane.
That's what I was thinking. I'm kind of going, you don't get to do it, but the idea is that we're gonna stop the toll plazas.
We're gonna use the COVID and everything else as a way to wring cash out of the system. Your buddy Larry Summers, who's not really my buddy, was on this is 5 years ago. He's on CNBC, and he says, "Well, we're gonna have to have negative interest rates." This is back when these guys were anxious to try.
I remember that discussion.
Yeah, and so Becky Quick says, "Well, I'll just have to take my money out of the bank," and he said, "That's why we got to get rid of cash. You shouldn't be able to do that."
Yeah, yeah.
And
the most important thing is not our policy issue; it's that you comply.
Yeah, it's totally that you comply, and I don't know this whole thing about whistleblowers, Lou.
What whole thing about whistleblowers?
Well, I mean, some people don't like the fact, I mean, you know, without getting into Snowden and these other people, but the idea that this is quiet in the IRS. I mean, I don't know what, let's pick you, for instance, a huge bazillionaire. I mean, somewhere along the line, I don't want your or Zuckerberg's stuff being on the Sunday paper. Okay. Or whatever else is going to be on the internet, Sunday paper showing my age. But I also don't want, if our buffoons in Congress, and now I'm calling them crooks because I think they're all trading ahead of these numbers, and trading against me and my clients, which I don't like. I mean, it's what I do all day, and the idea that McConnell, you know, and his thieves would front run something like yesterday ahead of my people. If it's happening, I think it's unconscionable, and I think it is happening.
We already know what's happening. We've seen examples of Federal Reserve members front running and insider trading. We know that Nancy Pelosi does it.
Yeah,
I assume a number of other people.
Well, we know the lady who's the blondie from Georgia, the richest lady in Senate. Tell us her name.
Oh, she's not there. She's not there anymore. She lost the election. I know you're talking about though.
The wife of the guy who owns the ice.
Yes, she's not in the Senate anymore.
All right. Well, what I'm saying is, If all this stuff that the rest of the people pay, dumb people like me, schmucks like me and my clients and you and the rest of us, if all the stuff that we pay, and I don't think that my IRS stuff, not that anybody ever wants to see it, should be on the Sunday Tribune. But by the same token, if Jeff Bezos, for a period of 10 years, somehow or another, pays 5% when all the rest of us are paying 35. Lou, I think that's news. I mean, maybe, and it should be news even to the congressman who wrote the damn bill, or see what people are doing with the IRS stuff. I don't know where I feel about that. I don't know if you want to name Jeff Bezos. I don't know what you want to do, but I think it's news to people.
Well, it ought to be news. It can be news to people if, you know, there's a mechanism in place to release that information. I mean, but Bezos's tax situation or Cook's tax situation, those returns should be inviolate. And I don't care what the public interest is in his tax payments. Those returns should be inviolate. If somebody wants to raise a ruckus about Jeff Bezos and how much he pays, then let them hire a tax attorney and analyze the tax code and give the hypotheticals that show, look, a guy like Jeff Bezos who's doing this, and this only pays X or should only pay X in tax returns. But don't put his information out there on the internet.
I'm saying,
don't do it by some, you know, GS4 at the IRS who says to herself, oh, today's the day I can make a name. I'm going to strike a blow against the patriarchy because I don't like the fact that Jeff Bezos divorced his wife and is running around with a former news anchor. So I'm going to put his tax returns out. Or alternatively, the ESPN situation. This is a mirror of the ESPN situation where the female basketball reporter, who's white, gets a private conversation on a feed to ESPN with somebody, which she didn't realize her computer was on. That gets recorded by a black ESPN staff member on her cell phone, which she then releases to a black ESPN reporter in an effort to try to damage the white reporter. And you're looking around going, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Why are we allowing this?
Well, if it goes against somebody white, it's okay.
Well, that case raised some real concerns. They disciplined the low-level ESPN staffer by suspending her for 2 weeks, which is ridiculous. But my point is, we are getting into a situation where relatively low-level, you know, folks working in these organizations seem to have no sense of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, professionalism, professional obligations. If they have access to this stuff, they feel that they've got the right to punch it out there.
Lou, they're amoral. Amoral. We don't want anybody going to school anymore.
And they're horrified when somebody comes down on them. The young woman in Atlanta, Liberty, whatever her name was, that was releasing, she's I believe a former Air Force something or other, but she was releasing classified information that she just said, well, I think this is important. It needs to be out there. So I'm going to release it on my own.
If you haven't figured this out,
She was horrified that the feds came in and said, you just violated federal law, and we're going to put you in jail for that.
Lou, all you have to do...
And this is something of a cause to lead.
Why is this a shack? All you have to do is... The morality is supposed to be right now, if there's a delay in front of you, when you should have gotten through the green right, you get to go through on the red. We don't want any nuns anymore. We don't want any parents telling any kids what to do. We don't want any of that stuff. We don't want any morals. We don't have any rules or anything for anybody. And by the way, so we're all going to decide this morals on our own. Okay, that's terrific for 330 million people living in one area. But your friend Kim Fox, now the part where as long as people are co-combatants, it's okay to shoot?
Let me just run on that for a second.
Can we stop one second? I just want to make one more comment on the Jeff Bezos situation, and I don't really care. What I'm saying, Lou, is someplace, somewhere, if you and I sit on the Finance Committee of the Congress, if there is such a thing, whoever runs the IRS, someday I would like to know, okay, we have all these rules. We got all these rates. We just passed all these bills. Pick me out the top 20 people in this country, and I guess maybe I can guess the names. I want to know what they paid. I want to know what the sum total is of the stuff I voted on for the last 20 years. And if it comes out that those guys somehow find a way to pay 5%, I want to know about it because I want to go back and change this crap.
But you could sort that out. You could hire a tax attorney to sort that out.
Me, I'm saying the people in Congress.
These guys are in public companies. Their compensation is a matter of public record. They have to public.
Their taxes aren't.
No, but you could take the tax code and look at options that they have and what they're making and how that money's being diverted. You can look at their charitable contributions and their foundations. You could pull that out and sort that out if you want to make the effort with information in the public domain. What you can't do, and I'm going to be adamant about this, you can't publish and break the trust that sits out there for all of us. Because if some low-level clerk is willing to take Jeff Bezos' tax information as Gates and dump it out there on some sense of justice, then that same person could do it with yours or do it with mine. Because they don't, your name gets in the press or they listen to one of our broadcasts and say, those guys are jerks. I don't like that. I'm going to publish their tax
information. Well, see, Lou, I look at it totally different, not in the privacy part. Like I said, I don't want anybody's name out there. But for me, it's an absolute excoriation of our elected officials. They should know that the compilation of their crap for the last 100 years in IRS stuff, it reaches the point where rich people don't pay anything. They should know that.
Why do you think, notwithstanding the best efforts of people like Ross Perot and some others who actually understood the IRS tax code, notwithstanding their best efforts to simplify our tax structure and to simplify it in a way that makes it understandable to average people, notwithstanding the fact that that's probably a good idea, it's not happening. In fact, the tax code is getting more labyrinthine and difficult to understand.
Well, I can tell you several spots.
Our lawmakers know this. And the tax code gets used to promote certain social causes, but it also gets used to protect people and protect businesses.
It protects rich people, Lou.
I don't know whether it protects rich people or people get rich because they understand how to protect themselves over there. But the short answer is that the push to simplify taxes has a huge impact on people who have structured their entire economic lives around avoiding paying taxes. That's a huge issue. It ought to be a huge issue, but it's not. We have the IRS going after, relatively low level middle class folks who are, behind on taxes or not paying taxes properly and yet can't prove certain things with regard to their taxes to the satisfaction of the IRS. And yet, tax avoidance on a massive scheme at upper levels, but we're not interested in those upper levels.
SP futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 174. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Low and overpriced stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Ali. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 41. NASDAQ futures up 181. Dow up 290. Congress relief rally as it appears Congress will avert a government default. What a way for congressmen to make money trading. We're going to have a default? No, we're not. I'm so disgusted with these people, I can't even talk. DAX up 197, 1.3%. FTSE up 80, 1.1. CAC around up 105, 1.6. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 149. We still don't have Shanghai open, but Hang Seng is up 735, 3%. Now, they were getting clobbered all week, but still, that's a massive move, 735. So everything's okay now, as long as the government can borrow more money. It's pretty scary when you think about it. Yesterday, we ended up 102 on the Dow, 17 on the S&P, NASDAQ down 68 after being down heavy in the morning. Bounced back pretty good. Bonds are unchanged at 1.52%. Bund minus a basis point at minus 0.20. Japan positive 0.07. Got oil down at $1.17 to $76.26. Brent down 84 cents, $80.24. Natural gas down 16 cents, $5.51. RBOB down a penny at $2.28. And we've got gold up $3.29 to $17.65. We've got silver up 28 cents to $22.81. And we've got Bitcoin down $6.90, but still $54,251. It's up like 8 or 9 grand the last couple of weeks. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have rainy conditions in the area, and that's keeping the traffic relatively slow here on a Thursday morning. Not hard rain, but enough to make it slick and to reduce travel time or reduce visibility, which is affecting travel times. But no significant accidents to report if you're coming in on the Edens or Kennedy right now. Same could be said for the Eisenhower and Stevenson, so that's good news. We have some delays on the south side, but no accidents. Looks like the only crash in the area right now is on I-80. I-80 westbound between Briggs Street and Richards, which is exits 134 and 133, is looks like it's closed due to a vehicle fire. Crews are on the scene working to get that cleared, but that's affecting I-80 westbound and is causing major issues down near Joliet in the southwestern suburbs. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, rain on and off throughout the day. Mild temperatures, a high of 71. Right now it's rainy and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 92. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the NL wild card took place last night, and it was the Dodgers walking off the Cardinals with a two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth, breaking up a 1-1 tie to beat St. Louis 3-1 and advance to the NL Division Series. Well, they'll play division rival San Francisco, so the two best teams in all of baseball record-wise have to play each other in the first round of the playoffs, which is not ideal, but it'll be Dodgers versus Giants, a rivalry series in round one after the Dodgers advance. White Sox begin their division series this afternoon. It's a 3:07 Central Time first pitch. White Sox at Houston to take on Dusty Baker and the Astros. It's a battle of Lances on the mound, Chief. Lance Lynn for the Sox, Lance McCullers Jr. for the Astros. Looking forward to that one this afternoon. Of course, the nightcap in MLB will be Red Sox versus Rays in the first round of their series. Lastly, Thursday Night Football tonight is a good one. NFC West battle, the LA Rams versus the Seattle Seahawks. 7:30 Central Time kickoff.
I can't watch it, so I don't even care who's playing.
Well, I think Fox picks it up starting tonight, so I think you can watch it.
Okay, maybe I can.
Let me say thanks, first of all, for playing that great clip from Airplane.
Yes.
It's one of the greats.
I wanted to note that I got a chance to go see San Francisco play here when they're one of their last stands here in Denver. That's a good baseball team.
Yeah, they're just so fundamentally sound. They have good offense, good pitching, and then you add Chris Bryant in there, who's just a stud right in the middle of the lineup. And they, I think they're going to win it all. I mean, you never know in the MLB playoffs, but I think they have all the recipe for it.
I'm sitting here reading this article. Not that I'm not paying attention, guys. I surely am, but it's caught my eye. You know that if you age a barrel of whiskey for 12 years, you have to pay a tax every single year it's in the barrel?
On the theory that it's an appreciating asset, I assume.
Who knows if there's a theory? I mean, every year a barrel ages, it's taxed again and again and again and again. If you're drinking a bottle of 18-year-old Elijah Craig, that whiskey from that barrel has been taxed 18 times before it was bottled.
Is the tax realized when you pull it out of the barrel, or is the tax realized? You have to pay the tax annually.
I think you got to pay the tax annually on everything you're aging.
What if the whiskey goes bad or the barrel breaks?
Well, I think you're bleep out of luck.
What if you drink a little bit every year? Does that lower the tax rate because it's less volume?
That sounds pretty stupid, even for the IRS. But it's stupid enough to be true.
For the first time ever, there are more than 10 million barrels of bourbon aging across Kentucky, and distillers set records by filling nearly 2.5 million barrels in a single year. But the industry is contending tariffs that are due to double later this year and a hefty one-of-a-kind tax bill. Tariffs have been devastating, blah, blah. It goes in to explain all the stores in Kentucky are slated to pay more than $33 million in aging barrel taxes in 2021 alone. That figure is 140% higher than it was 10 years ago because there's more in the barrel. This is truly a historic and landmark record, but it comes with a huge cost. No other place in the world does this, and they don't do it in Japanese whiskey or Canadian whiskey or Scotch whiskey or Irish whiskey or even Tennessee whiskey.
That's fascinating. What is the social benefit of taxing an unrealized asset? Because this is something that's been projected in one of the new, I think it's the social reconciliation bill that sits out there, the $3.4 trillion that has now become a linchpin of the Biden presidency. There was a change in the tax law that was going to allow taxation on unrealized capital gains. So if you had a stock that went up, in the previous year, you would have to pay taxes on that, even though you never cashed it out.
Well, as a professional in the business, when I was a market maker, I always had to do that. You got to pay on your increase in equity from year to year.
Inequity on ownership?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a little different.
No, I'm saying you had to before the Tax Act of '84. Nobody. Virtually, a lot of people on the floor never paid taxes because it was on closed transactions like retail people pay now. So every day, Lou, I used to get we had positions all over the floor, right? This is in 83 or 82. We used to get a status every day that was this big, thick computer run. When they used to call them computer runs. And it would have every single trade in there, every option, and what I paid for it. Or sold it for. So if you wanted to, if you had an account that was that broad, let's put it that way, any kind of spread you did, all right, well, you could always find one that was,
But these are sales. These are transactions, and so there's a basis for that stock, and then a profit off that stock. And that's calculated, and you're realizing that. Unrealized capital gains means, it's astounding to me that you would consider taxing somebody whose stock goes up in 1 year and then might lose, you know, a comparable amount of its value the next year, and if you don't cash the stock out.
What I'm saying is, if you have a portfolio as big as we used to have, what I would do the week before, I'm not saying we ever did this, because we always pay taxes. The people who I was involved with, we might have shaved them down a hair, but there were people who had never paid any taxes. So what you would do is you'd put a spread on, say a company paid a 1% dividend, so they had strikes at the 63 strike and a 64 strike. You'd buy the spread for a dollar or whatever, 15 teenies or something, and you'd probably pay a little bit more because there was a little edge to it. Say you paid a dollar for it, all right? Well, in 2 months, the stock's now 75. Well, guess what? One of the legs is a big winner and one's a big loser. So if you took off the loser part, guess what? You didn't pay, and you'd apply that toward all the other winners you might have had during the year. You now have no income. So you don't pay
any
taxes.
But you have to sell the stock, or you have to.
No, I'm saying you sell the losers to match up with the winners. But really, how I did during the year was, if I started with $1 million and ended up with $2 million, I made $1 million. Because there's thousands and thousands of transactions.
Well, I guess now I understand why they want to tax unrealized capital gains, and it's your fault.
No, here's all this stuff to me is very
that's
simple.
That's all I need to hear.
Well, I just actually had people talk to me yesterday about doing some holding on. What do you call it when you're the person who holds the trust.
You're the custodian.
And,
okay.
Well, there's a massive cottage industry that I just found out yesterday. It's stuff I should know about, but I don't. It's hard to know everything, as we all know. And the smarter you get, the more you realize you don't know. There's massive cottage industries now, and people who use the step-up basis, which to me is the most dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, Matty, you know what the step-up basis is?
No, I don't think so.
If your dad, for instance, bought 1,000 shares of IBM at, you know, $20 back when the buttonwood tree was still there, and now it's $150, and he croaks, he can give you the stack, okay, which is fine. I got no problem with that. But now your basis becomes $150 the day you got it. So nobody ever pays taxes on the $130. Because he gives it to you, and you get to, it's called a step-up basis. Okay, which is fine. I don't necessarily, as to why somebody gets to take the 130. Now, of course, I'm a big fan of, you should index capital gains. Right, so there really shouldn't be a capital gain there anyway, because, you know.
I agree, it's already been paid.
Well, no, I mean, what I'm saying is, of course you can't believe the CPI now, but the CPI was legit. If you bought a house 20 years ago for $40,000 and sold it for $80,000, and the CPI is doubled, you haven't made any money, right, Lou?
Right.
But nobody does that. So we can't do anything simple there. But now what people are doing, say a guy like you, Lou, bought 1,000 shares of Microsoft at $20 and it's now $300, you get to declare this as a charitable contribution, and the basis is now $300. So the basis that goes into I don't know the full story on this, but you can now have the Lou Charitable Trust, and when you donate it to the trust, the basis of the trust is now $300, and you get to deduct as a charitable contribution the whole $300. You never pay tax on it, but now you get to deduct the $300. That's unconscionable to me.
Well, this is all part of the design. This is why we want to simplify the tax code. And I don't want to get into a discussion about the tax code at whatever hour of the morning it is, because we'll put people to sleep. I do want to address the Kim Fox thing that you mentioned earlier, and just again, the idea that you have public officials that are this making decisions that are this dumb is an indication that ideology is running the show and not reality. So the story, as I understand it here from Denver, and I literally could not believe this when I read it, you have a gunfight breakout between two rival gang factions, one that's sitting on a street corner, a bunch of guys sitting on a street corner, two cars drive by, they exchange words, the two cars go around the block, and then return, and this time when they return, the guys in the cars pull their guns out and start shooting at the guys in the street corner. The guys in the street corner retreat into a house and shoot back. One of the guys in the cars is killed. A couple of other people are wounded. Gunfire flies across this intersection in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's like Al Capone.
It's all on tape. It's all on tape, too.
And then a police car rolls up while this is happening. And so you've got video of the shooting. You've got cops who were witnesses. They arrest some of these people. They arrest the guys in the... They try to go into the guys in the house. The guys in the house refuse to come out. They're fully armed. They finally get a SWAT team to go in there and clear them out. And out of this, there are exactly... The cops arrest everybody. Out of this melee, there are precisely zero charges that the state's attorney, Kim Fox, is going to charge. Nobody's going to get charged. Because according to Ms. Fox, this was mutual combat.
What does that even mean? What does that even mean, Lou?
Let me put it this way. There's no meaning in this context. Mutual combat is a doctrine developed out of English common law that says that when two guys or two women decide they're going to get in a fight, And they both come to a brawl, and they're engaged in a mutual brawl. Not when one of them tries to run away and gets cornered. Not when somebody gets sucker punched. The two parties express a desire to go get in a beat on each other, and they get into a fight that, as long as nobody else gets damaged and there's nobody's pulling a gun or anything, that you're not gonna charge either one of them with a crime. That the mutual combat was by their both rational decision makers, and therefore there's no criminal intent there, and we're not going to charge it. It has absolutely no application to a situation where two car full of guys pull guns out and start shooting at people on a street corner, who then in defense pull their guns and shoot back. That is not mutual combat.
Well, my attorney buddy that I had a cocktail with the other night says, he goes, you know, there's no question that to try and figure out whose bullet, hit the guy who is dead, he goes, you're going to have some problem with that. He goes, that's probably an easy defense. He goes, but how do you...
Illinois has a felony murder rule. I guarantee you that the weapons that were used in that shootout were in the possession of people who should not have had them, or
it would be illegal for them
to have them.
Well, that's his point. You can't. How does when you got the camera looking right at a guy, how is that not illegal discharge of a weapon in the city, for God's sake?
It's a felony. The guys pulling the guns out of the cars are engaged in a felony. Whether the people shooting back are engaged in a felony, I don't know. But the guys in the cars are engaged in a felony, and the fact that one of their number is killed while the others are engaged in a felony makes them all parties to felony murder. That's a first-degree murder charge under Illinois law. It's controversial, but you can charge it. And you could immediately arrest those guys and charge them with felony murder
The rest of the world wants them off the street for a while. We don't really care why.
This is correct. The guys in the house shooting back, they may have a valid self-defense claim, but I'm guessing that most of them were in possession of firearms that were illegal, or that they were people who weren't supposed to have firearms. And the fact that they refused to comply with police orders to come out and put their weapons down and had to be taken out by a SWAT team is another felony.
Well, you see other one where the two guys that look like they're probably 17 or so, again, some moron is videoing this. They're having this huge knife fight in the driveway in front of the house. I don't know if you saw this one. Well, I was searching for the video on the other one.
That actually might be a mutual combat situation, depending on what happened or who was the aggressor. But my point is, Tim Fox, your state's attorney, says, I'm not going to prosecute anybody. No, the short answer is Ms. Fox is a George Soros product, funded product, who said, I don't want to put people in, I don't want to put any black people in jail, or I don't want to put any Hispanic people in jail. I think she'll put white people in jail, but, you know, we haven't really had a chance to test that. This ideology of, you know, we have too many young black men in jail, and so we're not going to put any more in jail. And that, I think that's what's playing out, but what she's doing is actually the reverse of what is called the broken windows theory of policing, which was used with great success in New York, which says you don't ignore low-level crimes. You enforce the law against low-level criminal acts, because invariably the people committing those are either going to go on to make bigger criminal acts, or they're already guilty or being pursued for other criminal acts.
Buddy,
if you arrest them for the low-level stuff, you take them off the street.
My buddy, the other
reverse of that.
My buddy,
we're going to ignore gunfights in the streets.
Yeah.
On some perverse theory of racial justice.
Well, my buddy the other night said, and he is, I'm going to say, way to the liberal side, as you know, as an attorney. But he says there's something going on here. He says this isn't right. He goes, I'm pretty liberal and don't want people that shouldn't be in jail to be in jail. He goes, and I want to give everybody an even break and make the system work for everybody at all ages and all levels of society. Because, but there's something else going on here. She's either getting paid by somebody, or somebody has decided that they want this city cleaned out and they want everybody out of here. Lou, the black neighborhoods are emptying.
No, that's not it. He's ignoring the very basic and simple explanation, which is that Ms. Fox, the guy who's the district attorney for San Francisco, a number of other large-scale city district attorneys were elected with money from the Soros Foundation, and this is a matter of public record, expressly to shut down what they call the school-to-prison pipeline, the incarceral state that from this ideological perspective, engages in racist enforcement against African-American perpetrators and puts them, locks them up, gives them criminal records, makes them unemployable, and that this is the election of DAs who will not prosecute these crimes is an ideological goal.
Okay,
and that was expressed.
All right, so
that was an expressed part of their campaign.
Okay.
So what's happening is this is the ideology playing out in the face of reality.
The difference between my more conservative friends on the show and me is not that I don't agree with you guys all on some level. I do. But my thing in life, for whatever stupid reason I ended up on this, I follow the dough.
And that's where you're wrong, Chief.
Well, the dough is, on this one, is 80,000 black people have left town in the last decade, and I'm going to say another 80,000 have left in the last year, and neighborhoods that used to be black are now abandoned, and people are buying up this property. It is impossible now. 2-3 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, you could actually live in one of these neighborhoods as a regular person, and even though it was way more dangerous than another neighborhood, you could live there. Now I'm saying those people are saying, I got to go. They're out of here. When you start talking about, you know, square miles of the city with how many houses up and decaying. And Luder, there's a long-term plan here somewhere that has nothing to do with a bunch of guys going to jail. There's an undercurrent going on here that is unmistakable.
That may or may not be true. I don't believe that. I believe in more opportunism. But what is playing out are ideologues in positions of authority, and their ideology is running the show. They are not convinced by the reality that plays out around them. They are convinced by the value of their ideology to themselves.
Lou,
that's why they were elected.
They can't be this,
that up front.
They can't
and,
be this stupid.
People voted for it.
Nope. I mean, I don't want to recall a human being dumb or stupid. I was taught never to do that. But they can't be this stupid. They must realize. Kim Fox has to realize.
They're not stupid. They're ideologues.
But
this is the same process that caused us to invade Iraq with the idea that we were going to build a civil democracy in the, in a country in the Middle East. And every marker there said no, no, no. But the people making the decisions were ideologues.
The people making decisions wanted oil.
That we could push that.
People making decisions wanted the oil. But I'm going to say even Kim Fox has to understand that what she's doing right now is hurting the people she thinks she at least allegedly is trying to help. She has to know.
I think that is a right explanation that is belied by her statements, by her statements during the campaign, and by what she's doing right now. I don't think she's looking around saying, "Ha, my evil plan is coming to fruition." She looks around and says, "Well, you know, we just gotta get this through this period of adjustment, and then everything will stabilize."
Well, you know what?
She's telling herself that.
If she does this for another 10 years, she's not gonna have any people left to save, Lou.
You and I know that, but you know, how long did we putter around in Iraq in the face of a situation that was totally nuts, and you know, said to ourselves, all we got to do is get through this period, this instability, you know, caused by our coming in and changing the circumstances, and then things will level out. And we said that for years.
I think people in Iraq, if you read, I didn't read all of it. I should have. All of it was pretty long. The British rendition of why we were there in the first place. All they kept talking about was Cheney and those guys. All they cared about was who's going to end up with the oil. They assumed that the government thing was an easy part that would take care of themselves because they got talked into it.
I don't believe that because we didn't exploit the oil.
Okay, maybe they, whatever. Those guys were gone pretty quick though.
I mean, whose guys were gone pretty quick?
The Cheneys and those guys. They were out of there pretty quick.
I'm just saying there was no, I saw absolutely no evidence that we were going in there to exploit oil. None.
I'm with you on that. I'm saying when I read the British account of the planning to go in there, I remember reading several pages where they said we were stunned by the amount of time that the American government spent on who was going to get the oil and very little time about how we were going to govern the place.
Well, I can't speak to whatever the Brits' perception was, but I will tell you that what was driving the train in Washington D.C. with Cheney and the others was the idea that we could go in there and build a stable democracy in the face of just irrefutable evidence that that was a fool's errand, and it stayed a fool's errand, and we stayed the course for years.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just saying that, you know, ideological people who are ideologues, and Ms. Fox seems to be one, people who are ideologues are not put off by the reality of the situation that they create and foster.
Lou, in our lifetime,
they believe that all you need is a little more of whatever it is they're doing, and things will turn around.
Well, Elizabeth Warner, more regulation. In
yes.
Vietnam, body counts. We
yep.
counted more of their bodies than ours. I mean, the show, it's still, what do they say in Casablanca? It's still the same old story?
the ultimate definition of insanity, and it is rampant in these folks, keep doing more of the same thing and expect a different result.
Yeah, well, all right, Lou, we got a dash, buddy. S&P futures up 40, NASDAQ futures up 180. We've yet another buy the dip. Whatever the thing was, we get the government money in and we're going to go. I'm glad we're up, though. I'm long for my people. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello, no pay, Stocks and Jocks. That's Mal. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 42. NASDAQ Futures up 177. We had a big swing. We had Congress coming to some sort of a deal. We had maybe some people front-running it. We don't know. And now we have everybody made a lot of money. So, Dan, are you up for $100,000 for a seat right at the new Bears Stadium?
Yeah. Sure.
Maybe a little more to this, you know, plus you got to bring three of your pals, so that's $400K. This is what's being floated this morning.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a number. Maddie, are there people dumb enough?
I guess. But the stadium's a full again, from what I'm, you know, what we're seeing. So that's good news.
Yeah. It's so what your companies that were doing the natural gas stuff. I mean, Dan, are you able to? Because I had a couple of questions yesterday from actually my clients that were wanting to know about. I really wish. Well, if we decided to have a big staff and do research. Two places I'd kind of like to do research, Dan, because I think there's actually research to be done, is one in these oil companies, because everybody just lobs them together as a big blob, and they're really not. Some are mostly gas, some are oil, some have basis problems with where they are, some don't, some are near a pipeline. Every time the political winds shift, the companies that are going to do better relative to the other ones, I think, shifts with it, and it's just not really something I can keep up with. I love some of the stuff you tell me in some areas, and the other one probably is some kind of bioscience, where I really don't know the places that are, you know, have the greatest new cancer drug or something. And of course, they're going to get bought by somebody else because they never get to market themselves. But that's another story. But don't you find that whole oil area pretty darn fascinating? It's pretty hard to get your hands around. I mean, you're closer to it than me, but I think to know all these companies and what their mixes are and what they're working on is pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, I started out as a high yield bond manager, and so energy has always been a big part of the high yield market. So that, I think, has given me some advantage in terms of knowledge base on a number of the companies. And a lot of the companies in the energy sector have used the high yield market, or have done financing through high yield, some more successfully than others. And yeah, it's broken down to a number of different. There are the E&P, the exploration and production companies. And then the transport companies, the ones that actually transport. You have oil companies that predominantly do oil. You have a number of companies that do a mix of oil and gas. And then you have a number of companies that just do gas. And, you know, we had talked about a few of those. SWN, which is Southwestern. We still own the bonds, and they just went through a refinancing of some additional debt. I like the bonds that we own now because they're going to be maturing within, they should be maturing by March. They did do, they do have some bonds that are coming due in 30, that are going to pay like 5.75%. That company is actually very specifically located in the Appalachian region. So their geographic location makes a difference as well. And then being able to transport from those locations to other places that need, need gas or need help in getting gas. And so some of the regulations that have taken place have impacted some of these companies, and some of them have not. And the other thing is that some of these companies actually benefit from the clean air and the climate change, and that they're given subsidies and credits. Another company that we talked about recently, Spire, ticker symbol SR, but we actually like the preferreds, SRPRA, and they're, predominantly a gas company that's located in a number of other areas as well. They're in Missouri, Alabama, Mississippi. And I think knowing the companies and knowing the management makes a big difference. Seeing what they've done in the past in terms of acquisitions. So some of these companies have tried to move into other areas. Some of the companies had, started out as coal companies that moved into natural gas. Some had a larger mix of oil and gas initially and moved more towards gas. But when you start talking about the rig companies, and we had talked about Noble, Transocean is another one, Valaris, all those companies had trouble recently, but a lot of them have come back quite a bit. They tend to benefit from higher global demand, and also certainly higher oil prices, which is what we've seen right now. So it depends on the company. Then you also have those energy companies that, are in the retail sector as well, that are, like the Marathons that do, or the Exxons that do retail as well as production. And it is a wide space. Like any industry, I would say that management really plays a big role. That's really our key determinant in our research process, is to get to know management, understand where they are, understand that they're, well capitalized, if they are going to use the debt markets, that they're doing it wisely, and that they have a goal of paying down debt. And that's not true of all the energy companies. So it's a really wide mix. I do think, one thing I wanted to mention today is that I think what's interesting with the infrastructure bill is that a number of companies are already benefiting from some of the proposals that are being made. We've talked about a number of infrastructure-based companies, and they will benefit. They are already benefiting from, for example, highway bills that are in place. A number of parts of that bill include, like the climate change part, for example. But there are already subsidies and credits going to not only utilities but gas companies, not so much the pure oil companies, but more the companies that are doing things to, like in the case of SR, Spire, trying to keep the methane emissions down and the transmission of gas. And they can show improvement in that, and as they show improvement, they're being subsidized for that. They're being given support, government support, and credits for anything that's improving climate change. I also think that these are the companies, the ones that are already established and in place, whether it be a utility or a gas company, that are in the best shape or the best place to be able to make these climate changes. And not so much those startups that are doing, for example, just wind power. I think the companies that already understand the distribution, that already understand rate issues, because rate issues are huge when it comes to pricing, those are the companies that I think, the ones that are there that are well managed, I think, are the ones that are going to be able to deal with climate change the best and continue to make improvements in that area. I would stay away from some of the small startups because management hasn't proven themselves, and because, you know, for example, we're talking about wind, that if their particular you know, they might be getting some government subsidies, but if they're not actually producing energy in the end, or they're having difficulties with their build out programs or their cost structure, that's still going to be a problem to the company in terms of from an investor's point of view, and also looking at it from a long term, which is what we do. We look at it from a long term.
Yeah,
so,
can you?
So yes.
Are these guys usually pretty forthcoming? I mean, how many of them, like especially the smaller mid-sized gas companies? I mean, they can you tell how much they. Natural gas goes from, you know, $3 to $6. Well, you can't just jump forward and say, well, every gas company is going to make money doing that. Don't some have longer term supply contracts at some of these utilities?
Yes.
I mean, are they pretty forthcoming with that? Or I mean, I remember guys used to buy various gold companies when gold was running up back in the 80s and 90s. All of a sudden, they'd find out that the guys had hedged all their gold for the next 2 years, and it didn't really benefit the company at all.
Yeah, no, it's the same. I know, you know, it's the same thing happened with airlines, for example, when because many airlines hedge their fuel costs. So that's, again, it depends on location. I like Southwestern. I like the Appalachian region. I tend to like they call it the DJ Basin, which is out in Colorado. So it really depends on the region. When you start adding the global geography, you really have to know the individual markets there, and then you have to also take into account some of the governmental or sovereign risks that you're going to have with investing in companies that are producing predominantly, say, in the Middle East or not so much the Gulf, but possibly in, I know Vietnam has become a popular source of production, and then also South America. So you really want to know the mix of where they are. On the oil side, I would say it does benefit to be geographically diverse. I mean, North Sea is another example. And then you have to understand in each of those regions what the pricing issues are, the rate issues, like how much flexibility they have. They have caps on what they can charge. So there's a lot of nuances that go with it. But, you know, still going back to the basics, I would say the managers of these companies are the ones that are, in their history of acquisitions, the history of knowing how to control rates, the history, if it's an E&P company, the history of being able to be productive and successful at finding the
Dan, you doing right any locations. with coal companies? Because I understand, at least I've been watching some of the stuff here in Illinois, the exports is starting to go through the roof.
Yeah, I heard that there's, some foreign countries have picked up as well in terms of imports. The coal industry is not dead. I mean, it's still very much alive. And again, some of these companies that have, you know, some of the companies have coal as part of their business. We talked about Black Hills. They're a utility company, but they still have some mining and coal mining as part of their business. And it's kind of a cash cow business. It's not necessarily a growth business, but it's, again, companies that have been involved in one area of the energy world tend to be companies that are going to be the best at adapting to the new environment. They understand the distribution. They understand the pricing. I don't know whether coal is a pure investment, but if it's a company that has coal as part of their history, I don't think it's a negative. I think it could actually be a positive.
Well, what we're doing is we're closing the coal plants here, and we're sending our coal over to China. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and Asia in general, I think, has been a buyer of coal. So, the other thing that you had mentioned were the biotech companies. And those we have invested in those from time to time. If it's a company that you get to know really well, if it's a product that you believe in. Problem that I always have with those companies is that they're usually not quite as forthright with information. And if it's a single product biotech company, I'm really concerned because, you know, competition, there could be a lot of issues on the regulatory side with trying to get their products pushed through. There was one company that we had an investment in, and then they had gotten, they did all the right things, really smart people, but then they, you know, they met some, had some headwinds in terms of getting to the final stages, which is actually where they start making money. So they receive grants and you know, money up front to do their studies, but then you want to make sure that, you know, there's going to be a certain time frame on the study so that they're able to get their financing or their funding through, where they're actually able to become profitable, if you will. So that really is not necessarily our big thing. The other thing I'd mentioned in the past is that when I would go back home to Boston for Christmas, all the biotech companies would take the last 2 weeks of December off, so it was hard to actually get meetings.
Yeah,
well, get meetings with them.
Well, I've had
you have to do your homework. You have to know the company. You have to really understand the product. You have to understand the target market. You have to make sure that you have really good, successful professionals who aren't really necessarily new to the area, but you know the landscape, know the marketing, know the end users, if you will. One of our concerns with the we've obviously seen some volatility picking up, and I just wanted to make a mention about inflation, that, you know, some of it is caused from inflation fears, and listening to the powers to be in Washington who seem to be talking back and forth about whether it's transitory, I wanted to just mention that it's not just transitory. There may be some numbers that are transitory, but we're in a situation right now that a lot of the inflation we're seeing is going to stick, and it's going to stick with wages, for example. The supply chain issues haven't worked themselves out, but I think as they work themselves out, it doesn't mean prices are going to go back. If anything, it could mean the prices are going to go a little higher. And it's not a bad thing. It's just something I think that people need to realize, and it's, listening to, again, different people in the political world talking about it strictly being transitory, I think you have to think past that. They're not looking at the long-term cycle. Interest rates go up, which we've seen the last few weeks. You know, the 10-year's at, I think, 153 now. It's going higher. We are very fortunate that we have a strategy that benefits when rates go higher. There are investments that benefit. The key investment that hasn't been benefiting and that doesn't benefit is tech. You know, we're by the nature of our style, we're underweight tech. But the areas that do benefit, for example, is some that I'm talking about, like utilities, for example. And they pay good dividends in this environment, and the dividends continue to go up. Also, floating rate notes, senior bank loan funds, preferred stocks, which we've mentioned, generally benefit. Dividend stocks in general then generally benefit in rising rate environments. REITs benefit. We talked about a couple there, self-storage, SELF, and then Invesco's Mortgage REIT, IVR. They both have had nice runs in the last few weeks. Short-term high yield municipals, short-term meaning 2 years and under, will not have the interest rate risk. So thinking that rates are going higher, thinking that we're having inflation, is not necessarily bad, and there are ways investing, even as a bond manager or a balance manager. It doesn't mean that, it may mean staying away from the 10-year treasury or long treasuries, but it doesn't mean staying out of the an area of the market that actually will do well. And a little bit of inflation, like I said, I think is good for the economy. So we're not as concerned as the market is. You know, we're not seeing that. We're not paying attention to the day-to-day talks about the debt ceiling extension. And, we're happy that there are days, there are up days and down days, because you can benefit even from some short-term trading if you're really on top of it. But we're not as concerned, I think, long-term, because I think we have to think big picture that we're in this long-term secular trend that is going to eventually cause rates to go higher and bring a little inflation back in the picture.
I guess I could say define a little. What you just said, Dan, I agree with everything, but I think you have to be a little more, how can I put it this way? A little more specific, and a lot of the stuff you just said, I can see double meaning in there. Not that you're intending to do that. When you look at the tech companies, if probably, because they're fairly concentrated, if inflation is 8%, and some people are going to be able to raise their prices 4%, I'm going to say they're going to be the group that can raise them more than 8%. So I'm going to say they're going to benefit as a company by the inflation, but if the interest rates start to reflect an 8 or 10% inflation, meaning they go to like 12%, there's no way the stock price of that company stays where it is, even though
right.
the company...
And that's what I mean. It's not the inflation fears so much that would cause tech companies that problem. It's the higher interest rates that would be the concern. And, you know, how much of the cost can be passed through, how much of their balance sheet is going to be impacted by higher interest rates. But I'm saying that it's likely that we do see both higher inflation and higher interest rates over time as part of the cycle. And I think some of the valuations are going to be readjusted, which is really what's happening. You know, there are other issues, obviously. I mean, some of the temporary issues, like what was happening with Facebook earlier this week, and, you know, some concerns about, you know, monopoly and privacy issues and all that are rampant. But I think the bigger picture is that some of the valuation issues, you know, the overvaluation, if you will, of these companies, it's going to come back into line as we see higher rates.
I especially like the one thing you said where a little inflation is a good thing. Milton Friedman said the same thing. Are you like a descendant?
No, I think it's just from having been in the bond market for, you know, actually both markets, the bond and the equity market, for a long time, and seeing that it's not, inflation isn't really something that's going to hurt us. It's just a natural part of the cycle. It's when it becomes stagflation or when we start seeing runaway inflation, you know.
Well, I think in some areas
we haven't seen that here for quite many years. But we have seen it in foreign countries. I mean, and that's why we're in a global world now, and it's sort of hard to, I mean, if we look just at the U.S., it seems like a lot of these issues can get resolved, but then we have to take into account what's going on overseas with a lot of trade partners, as well as a lot of companies that have a big influence on the world economy now. So they haven't dealt with, they don't have the history of dealing with these issues the way the U.S. does.
Well, we have a history of it, but it was
yes.
exceptionally painful.
Yes.
And we have a lot of people now that we've gotten power. And I'm not talking about right or left. We have a bunch of people that somehow either don't read history, don't care about history, or realize that by reading history, who made money and who didn't, and they're dying to do it again. I mean, for most of the people you and I know, inflation is the cruelest tax there is. Without question, it's the cruelest tax there is. I mean, there's people here, as we've opened up restaurants and bars and stuff here in Chicago from when we were closed, I probably talked to 10 people in the last 3 weeks and said that were, you know, kind of COVID people. I say COVID people, they were staying inside more than I was. And it's an interesting way to refer to them as COVID people. but I mean, they said, hey, I went back to Joe's bar, first time in 8 months. I'm never going back. The burger's $15. It used to be $8.
Oh, it's too expensive. Yeah.
You know. It's outstanding. Yeah. The Hispanic guy who works in the building said he took his family out to breakfast at a place he hadn't been in a long time. He goes, it was like $100 for 4 of us for breakfast. He goes, I'm not going back. How the hell can I do that? I mean,
yeah,
the stuff
I'm
is
seeing a mix of both. I'm seeing that the good places and the good service are getting the customers, and the customers are okay with paying a little more for the good, you know, for the good food and for the good environment and for the good service. That's just my personal.
Well, if you can, you will.
Right.
But if you haven't gotten a raise and everything around you is 10% higher, whether you want to or not, you're going to go to 10% less places. I mean, the math is unmistakable, right?
Right. Well, that's part of the issue. I mean, you're sort of summing it up. That's part of the issue in itself, is that fewer places to choose from because some have gone out of business or some aren't in favor because they've had to sacrifice something, whether it be service because they can't find help or, you know, I have a couple of restaurant owners as clients and they'll admit that, hey, we've had to cut portions. We've had to kind of use other sources of getting some of our products and food. There will be places that'll shine in this environment and there's ones that won't. And if customers really want to go out and they used to have 10 choices, now they only have 3, those 3 will probably end up doing better. So.
Well, sure. I mean, that's why this whole mess is some combination of concentration, monopoly, places out, people not being able to get loans for new places. I mean, I think the whole thing is fraught with peril here. But hey, you know, I wanted to mention to you, how many companies in the gas? I haven't heard from her forever, but talk about a story from the past. There was a lady who used to listen to us when we first started, Maddie. And, she came to town for some convention and happened to hear us when we were on the air someplace. And, anyway, from time to time, she'd send me an email telling me about the oil business and gas business in her area. And she's from, I say I haven't heard from her in probably 5 years, but get a load of this, Dan. She had her husband. You ever drive through Pennsylvania and wonder who owns all the tops of these mountains and where anybody lives there? Well, evidently, he and some of his buddies, or the dads of them, back in the God knows how far back, bought essentially the top of some mountain and had a hunting lodge up there. And they're hunter types, and every year they go up there and blast a couple of deers, and we know that's what guys do, I guess, in some places. And that was their shtick. And all of a sudden, some company comes by and says, by the way, you got natural gas all over your mountain. And so they ended up cutting some deal where they all got some dough, but then they were going to have to pay them per whatever, you know, per cubic foot or whatever you call it. And then, but the place had to put in a road, and they had to, when they left, they were going to have to take the road out and put it right back where it was. So 20 years from now, you never knew there was a road there. It was all part of this big contract, and they only had a certain amount of time when they had to do it. Well, natural gas prices went down during this era. She was telling me they have pipes they put across. They can put pipelines on top of the ground. They just lay them down there, like if you need a pipeline to go 30 miles, you know, to some other place where there's a terminal, you can just lay them on people's property. And they pay those people for the you know, they look like big hoses, not really pipelines.
Right.
And she said they ended up spending $1.5 million on this road. Prices went down. They never started drilling, and all of a sudden their whole lease expired 10 years or something. They did. Well, I don't know if they ever put the. I never heard from them where they put the road back or not, or the trees back on the road. She said they never even started drilling, or they did, and the price went down, and they just kind of abandoned it and cleaned it all up, and we're gone. I mean, was a lot of that happening, or a lot of these places just toast?
Yeah, I think some of the smaller players, because there are a fair number of smaller players in the area, in the oil and gas business, and I think they've suffered because they don't have diversification. If it's a local, whether it's a well that's been, dried up, and they've only bought, or maybe the cost of drilling in that area has gotten very, very expensive for some reason, or maybe the transmission part, like you're saying, in some cases, maybe they did get away with building, pipeline above ground, but in many cases, I think now they have to do most of it below ground. It would be the same concept as cable. There are always smaller players that are trying to come into the market, and that might have been a situation where somebody just happened to land, be in the right place at the right time. But, unless they were going to sell that land, to the right people, and I think it gets very complicated in the, in terms of the rights to the land and whether they actually own the land itself or whether they own the rights to it. It gets very complicated. So there's speculation is a big part of that. The initial, if you're looking at the whole oil gas cycle, from start to finish, the people who are actually buying on spec are going to be the ones that are going to be at the most.
Well, if you got oil, but I don't know that much.
Regulatory issues.
We got a dash. I don't know that much about the industry, but I know if you strike oil, even if you don't want to. If there's a road, which isn't always the answer, there isn't always one. You can truck it out, but if you got gas, you got to wait till some pipeline comes close, right?
Yeah, you got to wait for the pipeline. Yeah, no question about it. I mean, think again. we're in an environment that has moved towards becoming stricter and maybe more difficult in some ways for the pipelines, but at the same time, there's a big business in demand for maintaining those. MasTec, one of the companies that we have, does maintenance of oil and gas pipelines, and they're not going to change. I mean, there's still companies that are expanding, and, you know, Southwestern, I don't know if it's public news, but they're actually expanding more into the Northeast now with their lines.
Dan, we got to go, but I got
sure to. News.
But I'm going to cheat and ask you one more question. Is there? They're starting to get, I believe, I read this a while ago, they're starting to get ships that can compress natural gas and decompress it on the ship so you don't need the terminal. I don't know if they have any of those, but I heard they were starting to build such a thing. Is there any thought that you could end up with a huge, I use the word truck, but it would be bigger than a truck, something that could be like that on land where you could actually compress natural gas out of a spot that doesn't have a pipeline? I'm thinking.
I've heard that. Yeah, no, I've heard that as well. I don't know what the cost of that is, and I don't know how far along, I don't know anyone who's doing it currently, but I do know that I have heard about it, and it is something that makes a lot of sense.
Well, that would be a game changer. Dan, thank you very much, buddy. Dan Janitas from Kratos Capital.
Next week.
Yep, SP Futures up 38, and NASDAQ Futures up 159. Be back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tom Mount. It's Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 41 is where this is a relief rally because Congress is going to avert a government default. NASDAQ up 165, this government default thing. God, Matty, how many times have we gone through this in the 10 years you and I have been here? And I've been doing it 10 years before that. And what an abortion these things are every time. They all spend so much money. They all borrow every day. And the Fed... whatever. Not even going to go through that. DAX up 215, 1.4%. FTSE up 78, 1.1%. CAC around up 101, 1.6%. It's like you going out to Arlington, even though it's closed, Matty, and pleading, just one more, lend me one more $100. I promise I'll win this time. Like we got our government doing the same thing. It's scary. Nikkei up 149.5%. Shanghai is still closed.
Hang Seng up 735, 3%. They've been a big bounce back. They've been clobbered now for a while, but it's a big bounce back. They got to be back out of bear market territory, I would guess. Yesterday, we finished up 102 in the Dow, up 17 in the S&P, up 68 in the NASDAQ, as we were down most of the day and then flew back on the close. Bonds, 1.54 on the 10-year. The Bund, it's a minus a basis point, so they're minus 0.19. Japan, positive 0.07. So Japan creeping ever so slightly up, but boy, it's slow. Oil down 53 cents, 76.90. That's West Texas. Brent up down 34 cents, 80.74. Natural gas down 16 cents, 5.51. That's down about 60 cents or 10% in 2 days after Putin said he was going to help Europe. Why do I think Putin's guys shorted natural gas first? I'm getting so cynical. Our Bob, 230 unchanged. And we've got gold down 180, 1760. Silver down up 17 cents, 2270. Copper up 7 cents, 422. And we've got Bitcoin down 911. Now it's down 911. It was up earlier. 54,029. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports. Looks like rain. You guys are getting rained out?
I don't know. It's supposed to kind of rain on and off throughout the day with some thunderstorms in the area, too. We'll get to that in a minute. 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The rain in the area is affecting traffic, as you would imagine. We had an earlier significant crash on the outbound Ryan just before 75th Street. That apparently is all clear, so that's good news, but the Ryan is completely jammed up in both directions, and that's affecting the south side, as you would imagine. We also have very slow travel times on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. There is a crash on the Eisenhower. This is on the outbound side just before Independence Boulevard, which is exit 26A. That's causing solid traffic heading westbound on the Ike. It was already jammed up on the inbound side, but now the outbound side is really moving slowly on I-290. Edens and Kennedy are moving slow as well, but no accidents report, so that's good news. Off the expressways, we have a crash out in the western burbs, North Avenue at Melrose, and then further west out near Streamwood, there's a crash Munger Road at Stearns. And then we're still working on that vehicle fire down on I-80. This is an earlier vehicle fire that happened last hour on the westbound side of I-80 at exit 134, which is Briggs Street. They apparently have gotten that off to the shoulder now, so traffic is getting by. It did have I-80 completely closed on the westbound side, but expect significant delays near Joliet if you're heading west on I-80. So all kinds of slow driving conditions out there, mostly due to the rain. Weather today, that rain is going to continue on and off, and then we could have some thunder showers this afternoon and in the early evening as well. We'll reach a high of 71. Right now it's rainy and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 92 today. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, the Dodgers advanced in the NL wildcard game last night, walking off St. Louis with a two-run shot in the bottom of the ninth to beat the Cardinals 3-1. The Dodgers' prize is they get to play the team with the best record in baseball, the San Francisco Giants, in the division series. White Sox begin their division series play this afternoon, game one versus the Astros in Houston, 3:07 Central Time first pitch. Looking forward to that one. Lance Lynn taking the hill for the White Sox, and he'll face another Lance. Lance McCullers Jr. is taking the bump for the Astros. Lastly, if you're not watching baseball, because the Red Sox and Rays will be game two tonight after the White Sox game, there's Thursday Night Football tonight, too, and it's a good one. NFC West matchup between the L.A. Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. Chief.
Hey, John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. We're in this rainy, cloudy day. Matty, wasn't back in the day, I don't know if it was football or baseball, when they set up the playoffs and figured out who got to play who, didn't they say that you didn't the first round couldn't be against somebody in your own division?
That was a rule, yep, and they apparently scrapped that.
Was that baseball or football?
That was baseball.
It was
baseball. Absolutely was baseball, yes. And they scrapped that once they went to two wild card teams and then playing. It used to be one wild card, as you know, and you were automatically in the first round, and then they would say if you're in the same division, you couldn't play each other. Well, then once they went to two wild card teams and had this sort of one game, you know, win and go on, they seem to have scrapped that rule because the Red Sox are playing the Rays from their same division, and the Dodgers are playing the Giants.
I can't say as I like that.
I don't either. It'd be nice. I think they should reseed after every round. So you can get your best teams in the World Series, or at least they have the best chance of getting in the World Series.
We only got two rounds.
I know.
It's not like hockey.
Yeah, but I don't want the Giants won 107 games, which is one of the best seasons of all time, and their reward is they get to play a team that won 106 games, which is one of the best seasons of all time.
Yeah.
In the first round of the playoffs. And that doesn't seem right when you have teams on the other side that aren't nearly as good, at least in the regular season. By the way, we did get some tweets that we should go over.
Right.
Natachi writes in, he says, I'm going to see Notre Dame on Saturday here in my little town. I've got a ticket for Chief if he wants to come, but I want to see proof of vaccination if he wants to tailgate with polite Virginia society.
Oh, God.
So you got
polite society. Who wants that?
That's right.
Not so sure I'd fit in there, but...
Should be a good game. They play, what do they play, Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I have my... Natachi, he's been listening to the show forever. Good guy. He's been a friend of the show. He knows I said last week, I have my vax card in my wallet, and I guarantee you it will never come out.
Regarding your tax code conversation, Kevin writes in, the tax code protecting favored constituencies is only part of the story. Each complicating line in the code is an opportunity for control, and government creatures love control, which has become even more obvious over the last 2 years.
Kevin's right, I think.
Right, yeah.
But the question is, I honestly don't know. If you go back to some of the stuff Thomas Jefferson, and I have some of his quotes around here someplace. Of course, you're not supposed to mention him now because he had a slave.
Right,
so
yeah, he's
can't,
discredited
now. He's discredited. But anyway, the question is, this is kind of a normal pace. Some people would write that this is a normal pace of some sort of a democracy or any society. It gets more and more, people get less trustworthy of other people, the freedoms that people thought they had really don't want other people to have them, they just want to have them themselves. I don't know how the hell you bust this up. I mean, it's pretty obvious to a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that we're not going in the right direction here, in terms of personal freedom in a lot of ways. I mean, I never thought I'd be in that camp where I'm really worried about this stuff, but I don't understand the incredible ability of these people to try and know everything about everybody. I don't know how you break it up. I don't see how you all of a sudden the tax code, to me, there's a few very serious changes that need to be made in there, and I can list them really pretty easy. I think that everybody should pay the same rate, okay, whether you're a corporation or a partnership or an individual, the same maximum rate, but that you should be able to deduct the dividends. So kind of corporations don't have to pay twice. And right now they pay a small amount, but they have to pay twice, which causes the corporations to get way too big because they never pay people dividends. If they were able to deduct the dividends, you wouldn't see these, I won't say morons because they're doing it for themselves, you wouldn't see them buying all the stock back because the people who, the shareholders would say, just give me the dough, you dope. Don't be paying. I mean, this idea that you buy stock back to give money back to shareholders, you're giving money to the guy who doesn't want to be a shareholder anymore. What am I missing, John? How does that get money back to shareholders? That's insane. The other thing, you got to stop this step-up basis, and you need to index your capital gains. Because somebody, if inflation gets to be 10%, which I think it's heading, gotta hope I'm wrong, in 10 years, if you buy something, and you sell it for twice as much 10 years from now, you haven't made a dime if your inflation's 10% a year. Actually, if you compound it, it's more like if it's 8% a year, right? It gets there, right, John?
Right.
If you compound it, you haven't made any money. Yet if you buy something and you sell it a year from now and you made 80 grand on something you just bought, why should you pay half? So how does 1 year a long-term capital gain? One year's not enough for the Cubs to get better, for God's sake. I mean, right? I mean, why don't we index it and say, okay, inflation was, maybe you want the rate a little bit less because you're taking a longer term risk. So, okay, your regular rate's 35%, your capital gains rate is 30%, but if you've held something for 5 years and the CPI was, well, CPI, you can't trust anymore. Let's say we could trust it, is 20%. You get to deduct 20% and you pay 30%. Let's get all this other crap out of here. There's very simple things we could do. We get rid of the step-up basis, get rid of the carry interest. There's like five things we could do tomorrow that would make things incredibly easier. And oh, by the way, this whole idea of overseas taxation, if you do the business here, it's here. Those are five things that would change everybody's life for the better, I think. Janet, we just can't get there.
Yeah, and you know, the problem, I think, Tom, is that, you know, all of these are good ideas, and I could see how they would make a huge difference in just fairness and increase revenue and just kind of like spread the risk around. But you know how it would work in any kind of a revamping of the tax code. There will be loopholes for businesses, certain industries, certain geographical areas, preferred sacred cows, whatever. It will never be applied equally or fairly in the long run. I've lost all faith in the tax code to do the right thing by all people. It's become just an arm of keeping people impoverished at one level and making everybody else kind of skate on their responsibilities. And I think any kind of attempt to do it differently is just going to be illusory. I just don't see what the politicians we have writing this stuff and voting
well,
except for enforcing it. It's totally politicized. So.
Except for the part, John, that we're heading for, no matter what anybody, you can come up here with all the, and not you personally, but all the formulas you want, and I'm sure somewhere buried in Joe Biden's, who I'm sure has no idea what he's even talking about with this thing, Joe Biden's $3.5 trillion budget and plan and so forth is some calculation by some moron someplace that says, oh, by the way, this is going to increase our growth by so much that our increase in growth is going to be 5% going forward, which it'll never be on a real basis, on a nominal basis. It could get there if we pour money into the system. And oh, by the way, it's going to increase our growth up to 5%. And after these 3 or 4 years, instead of spending all kinds of money, our growth in national indebtedness is going to be 4.99% a year based on my calculations. So with 5% growth and 4.99%, we're going to be okay. You know, and 200 years from now, we're going to pay it all off. There's going to be that calculation in there someplace, and I'm going to say right now, it's bull.
Right, it's totally meaningless.
Yeah. Everything, I mean, when Trump put the tax cut through and said, oh, by the way, that we're going to end up with more revenue from this, that is such a load of crap. I mean, I think that at some level, Jan, you can say when taxes were on the extreme end were 90%, that, you know, nobody was going to put a building up, or nobody was going to be in business when it was 90%. And then what, Kennedy dropped it to 70, and then Reagan dropped it to 50. But whenever they did that, they got rid of deductions too. So you never exactly got that much your way. So now it's down to 35. Okay, well, the difference between 90 and 70 is a hell of a lot bigger difference. Do you honestly think that somebody who's going to put a building together or a business, and they think they're going to make dough, and it's a new idea, that they're going to make a difference between 35 and 32% or 31 or 30? It's not like it's 90, not like it's 50, not like it's 70. It's down lower enough. Just like the people who decide, okay, everybody knows that if an interest rate goes from 7 to 6, and people are valuing projects based on their interest rate, it's probably going to mean there's going to be some more projects out there. But nobody ever said in any economic class, in any literature, any place that anybody could remotely come across, that if you lower the interest rate from 1.75 to 1.5, it's going to make a difference. Really? I mean, none of this stuff. We're going to have the marathon this weekend. You're supposed to drink water. If you drink 5 gallons, you die.
Yeah.
You know, right? But then again, if you don't drink any, there's something to be said. Everybody likes to have a beer or two. You don't want 50.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah, including moderation.
Including moderation.
That's right.
So, all right, Chad. We got one more tweet I wanted you guys to touch on real quick regarding the Facebook whistleblower testimony. Our buddy Bob writes in, I think the key thing that was exposed in the Facebook whistleblower testimony is that AI, artificial intelligence, is not always predictable. Remember, that's the technology that is going to control self-driving cars.
Yeah. And how many of those are already cracked up?
Yeah. I find that interesting, just because so many people believe robots driving cars is 10 times better than humans. And maybe it is. I don't know. But I still would rather trust myself than something unpredictable.
I would not have much of a problem if all of a sudden a car had an emergency sort of thing or something like that. I mean, you could do it in such a way. But then again, if you counted on it, it didn't work, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
I think Jan and I learned in school way back in the day that throughout humankind, people's ability to invent new stuff always was further than the morals that came with the new stuff.
Sure.
And the Facebook thing is all of a sudden now people are saying stuff that has a you could always go into some bar at 2 a.m, which I haven't been in years and years and years, and find somebody to say something stupid. But the guy didn't have the ability to put it up on Facebook at 2:30 a.m. when he was drunk, or worse, right? And all of a sudden, everybody reads it if it's a hate piece or something. We never expected people to be able to, or have the urge to make it easy enough for people to put dumb things or smart things out so easily. And as a matter of fact, one of the guys on Tyler, what's his name, on CNBC, been there forever, good guy, it seems. He goes, one thing I've learned is it's better to stop tweeting after your first drink. You know, you probably don't want to read those in the morning. Just like you forget every conversation you have in the bar after you had too much to drink, right?
I would agree.
You don't really want a record of that. Really, but that's the way humans are. Now all of a sudden you got people taking pictures of you. We don't have any morals now of what can somebody show. If you come out of a place, Maddie, maybe you even had a drink, and you slip on a piece of ice and you go down, does somebody get to take a picture and say, here's another example of Maddie drinking too much last night? Okay. You didn't even have a drink. You slipped on some ice. Now, or you stepped on a shoelace you foolishly didn't tie. Now, all of a sudden, that's going to be out there forever. Here's Matt Weber, falling coming out of a bar. Why does somebody get the right to do that? I mean, why do they get to use your stuff for them? Yet everybody's got a camera, everybody's got a right wing.
Well, that's, to me, the ugly side of social media, that, you know, in a surveillance state where you want to know what everybody's doing, the most beautiful solution to that challenge is to make everybody reporting on themselves. And you embolden people to think, well, everything I can say about my life is of value and other people should read it. And, you know, it's a way of muscling your way into, you know, everybody else's time and attention. So no wonder that these things explode into, you know, shooting gallery events and people insulting other people and not apologizing strongly enough. But the kind of the seduction of letting people get a huge platform to mouth off and say stupid things that they would never have said in writing, you know, 50 or 100 years ago. And there'd be no way of publicizing the writing, even if they did put it down on paper. Now all these people are their own megaphones, and you got somebody tracking it and using it, and, you know, using it in a way that limits your ability to say what you really want to say. This is the great irony of it. Instead of giving you a big platform, it just gives you the right to say what you're permitted to say and go off of those limits, and you are screwed.
Well, this is when one of my buddies had a kid who just changed high schools that was getting bullied where he was, right? Online, of course. And he knew who the other kid was, and I said, you know, I don't have any kids, so don't listen to me. But for me, that would be the time when you would go over and ring the dad's doorbell and you say, hey, look, you know your kid's doing this stuff? Now, if the guy says, yeah, I do and I approve of it, then I don't know what you do. But probably he says, no, I don't. And in our day, it would be taken care of immediately, you know. But now I don't know if that works that way. He goes, oh, no, that would just make it worse. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you can't just go, like, talk to somebody. What do you mean you can't go talk? Tell the old man this is what they're saying about your kid is saying about mine, and I want it to stop. Hey, John, we only got 2 minutes. We got you on a little late here. I heard rumors yesterday, whispers in the wind, murmurs in the mist, that some tax bills are going out to some of these downtown buildings, and they're way up. John, they're supposed to be based on income. There's no income down here. What are they doing?
I think they've just decided, well, in a certain class of properties, they may have been, you know, historically undertaxed, or, you know, we blew it at some point, and we're making it up now. I saw this with a story that was written up in the Sun-Times, you know, last week or so about a nursery up in Palatine. It's been in existence for years. You know, they've got a lot of grounds where they grow stuff, and they have one little piece of their property where they have a store that's, you know, has always been taxed as commercial property. The rest was taxed as agricultural property, which is at a much lower rate. Well, now the county assessor has decided this is all commercial property. The thing is out of business now. They got to sell the property because their taxes went up by like, you know, 350% or more. There's no way that they can keep that business going. So they just reduced their some little floral shop in a mall somewhere and said goodbye to this, you know, 65-year-old plus business. Maybe at some point somebody could have thought, well, this is, you know, let's do this in a fairly fair, you know, graduated way if we have made mistakes in the past or overlooked things. But stuff like this makes you think that it's just a money grab.
It's a money grab.
Out of sources in all the traditional ways, and they're now looking to gouge anybody they can and let it play out in the courts and the appeal process. But in the meantime, it's like we got to grab it now or...
Well, the people that
everybody is screwed.
People that I talk to, and we got a dash here, but something about the taxes are going to double and four floors of people moved out? Really?
Well, you know, this is in an inflation-driven economy, Tom. This is the last thing people need.
Oh, yeah. John, take care of yourself. S&P futures up 40, NASDAQ futures up 156. Been pretty steady during the show. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.